Good evening and welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
And now we move on to some extraordinarily outrageous immigration policies and raids far from the U.S. border, but we look at also the issue of immigration reform. And while the nation waits for reform of our disastrous immigration policies, Southern California Latino communities far from the Mexican border have been roiled by a series of sweeps by U.S. Border Patrol agents that have led to scores of arrests. And I am extremely pleased to have with us the Reverend Arnaldo Abrelato of La Placita Church in Los Angeles. And good evening and welcome to WBAI.
Good evening, and it's good to be in your program. Good evening also to all the listeners.
It's a pleasure to have you. And Catherine Culleton from the Mexican-American Legal Defense Fund, stationed in Washington. It's great to have you, Kathy.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here and a pleasure to be with Reverend Alvarado.
Why don't we begin on the ground? Reverend, what actually has been going on in California? What are the circumstances that are faced by the Chicano communities out there, by the Latino population, pursuant to the policies of the Immigration and Naturalization Service?
What has been going on in Southern California, especially in the last 4 weeks, there have been ongoing raids like in the areas of San Bernardino, Pomona, and then there was a raid of one factory, and basically concentrated on where most of these Latino communities, you know, they're on, you know, they check on the bus station where they normally would be walking along. And to us, we felt that this is kind of outrageous that these people are here working and being part of our community, and they feel like being harassed by the immigration officers.
And who are the people? Put a face on the individuals who are being tormented, harassed, and very often sent back to awful circumstances.
Well, majority of them are basically Latino community. Many of them are from Mexico. There are some also from Guatemala and other areas in Central America. Ordinary people who have their families also. And what is outrageous is that as we look on the way it was done, some of them are being asked on the street. The immigration are calling it consultation. You know, it's like they're making consultation on the street. But to us, we call it something more like a discrimination. Why would the Homeland Security basically going into the community when looking, you know, supposed to be there should be in the border also protecting against drug and terrorism. But going through the community, going to the buses and asking people, do you have papers? And what is so wrong about it is that many of those who were deported, they have their children who were born here. They had their wives, and now many of them are separated. So that's why, I mean, these are they have their names, their faces. They are people of Latino origin who are basically, you know, trying to find a better life here in this country.
Father Abrelato, do you remember at any time in the past when this has happened before?
This has happened actually, odd enough, but some people are kind of making a kind of comment that seems like whenever election is coming, you have all this kind of more raids like this. But, you know, I don't know if some people might remember, but in La Placita, for example, a church with the Clarissian missionaries, we have declared that place during the 80s as a sanctuary for immigrations, for the immigrants, because there are so many raids that has been going on. Immigration has been entering churches, and then checking on people, arresting people, and deporting them. And as a church community, our response is, no, we are in solidarity with these people, who, whether they have papers or not. So we have declared our church as a sanctuary, and which did not make the immigration, you know, kind of happy. So this is not something new. This is something that has been going on before. But lately, I haven't heard of any movement like that. But right now, it seems like it's getting stronger. The response when we asked them, the moment they did this in Pomona and San Bernardino, all the churches through with the LA Metro IAF, what we decided was to speak to the people directly, to count the people, but also to have a response from the Homeland Security, from the Border Patrol. Why are they doing this? And why are they concentrated on areas where there are more Latinos? They're not going through Hollywood, you know, checking people, okay, where's your ID or thing like that. More in areas where there are more Latino people.
Reverend, may I just also add a legal perspective? I'm from the Mexican-American Legal Defense Fund, and
we have
our headquarters out there in L.A., and we've been investigating the raids. And if people want to, you know, report what's happened to them to lawyers, they can get onto our website. It's www.maldef.org. And just also, it's very interesting, you were talking about the historical perspective, and you mentioned that your church was declared a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it used to be that the former Border Patrol had an affirmative policy after some controversy in the 80s not to go into churches, not to go into service centers, not to go into schools, not to go into hospitals, mm-hmm. and not to do sweeps on city streets, and certainly to be in their jurisdiction, which is the border itself. It's not 200 miles from the border.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen in the last couple of years, and then very surprisingly over the last month, are these generalized sweeps and going into all of the areas that I just mentioned that used to be off limits. And it's something that's sort of a flashback to the past that's completely unnecessary. And the reason that these kind of sweeps were stopped in the past is because everybody was asked about their immigration status. Every Latino, right? Citizens,
mm-hmm.
legal permanent residents, and people who might or might not be undocumented, which is a form of racial profiling. That was the reason that sweeps weren't utilized. And it's very strange that now we see a return to the old policy,
mm-hmm.
which had been so harmful to the Latino community. And it's at a time when immigration enforcement really should be looking for, as you mentioned, you know, criminals and people who would do America harm, not people who are here working hard and keeping our economy going.
Yeah, you're right on that, Kathy. And for us, the concern is, like, for example, the people would say, well, okay, if the immigration is going inside the churches, but two blacks, they're waiting somewhere, you know, like in school. So there's some sense of, like, fear among the people. I don't want to go to church right now. That's why we have to address the community, like, 3 weeks ago to really talk to them that churches are safe places for them. But it's so hard to assure them because they see them walking around. They go to buses where mostly Latino community, they use a lot of buses. They go to the train. Like, for example, the church of La Placita.
Mm-hmm.
We have 11 masses every Sunday, which brings at least 50,000 people every Sunday to our church and 300 baptism every Saturday. And most of them, majority of them, come to our church by train and by bus.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this fear, okay, the church is safe, but then two blacks, three blacks, what happened? Could we reach the church, you know, before they arrest us? So this has been some of the fear that the people have.
I'm just wondering what the reaction has been from outside the Latino community. Have there been protests within the Latino, and is there support from outside?
Here in L.A., we have this organization that is called L.A. Metro IAF, Industrialized Area Foundation. And what we are part of this organization is a coalition of SEIU. They are part of the coalition. And then the groups of rabbis and synagogues, African-American community, Korean, Filipinos, and then Latino community with different churches, Catholic and Protestant. We have put together, we have come together to kind of voice our concern. So there were some, it's not like more of a protest, but more of coming together, trying to understand, trying to educate the people about their rights and what can we do in the midst of this harassment? What can we do in the midst of this racial profiling, of this choosing a particular community? And what is creating more fear is that there are a lot of radio stations among the English-speaking radio stations who are even calling people and say, call the Border Patrol, tell them to arrest them more in this area, in that area. And then the radio and the TV Spanish station would be, okay, folks, don't go to this area, don't go to that area because they're calling the migrants to go there. So there's some kind of the rumors, the fear is mixed together, and it's so hard. It is really making it difficult for working families, even among the immigrants and undocumented.
It's a crazy issue here in Washington, too. I would have to say this is probably, you know, a very high-level Latino civil rights issue, and we're part of the National Hispanic Leadership Agenda, which is 50 national Latino groups, and well, we're issuing a report talking about the backlash against immigrants' rights since September 11th, and we're actually very much in solidarity with Arabs and Muslims who have been
mm-hmm.
directly targeted, and now we're finding that the situation is getting worse and worse and worse for Latino immigrants, and we're in coalition with many civil rights groups and immigrants' rights groups. But on the other hand, you know, as the Reverend also mentioned, there certainly are a lot of anti-immigrant forces that are very vocal here at the national level, and it's a shame that the administration feels like they need to respond to the worst of the xenophobia in our society instead of actually moving forward on their immigration agenda.
Reverend, what do people need to understand about these workers? I know one group of workers that you and I were speaking about were also a Guatemalan, and mm-hmm. they were the Guatemalan workers who pick the coffee that they could not possibly afford to buy at Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Who are these people, and what do people know as we discuss building bridges?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as we just have last Sunday a kind of house meeting with all the different communities in our church, and it was very evident that there is really so much ignorance in this country about the Latino community. You know, there is this movie, A Day Without a Mexican, and in one of the scenes, this senator was saying, what are we going to do with all this Mexican coming from Guatemala and El Salvador? And then there was a pop-up says, you know, excuse me, Mexicans are from Mexico, Guatemalans are from Guatemala, El Salvadorians are from El Salvador. And because there's just a sense of misunderstanding, even why do they come here? And I would say, you know, when we think about globalization, when we think about trade, I mean, I went to Guatemala and I have been involved with some of the people, the small faith communities, and you ask them, so what is the work that you do here? I work in the coffee, I am a farmer, I work in the farm. And how much are you earning a month? Well, sometimes I get paid $20, $20 a month. And ordinary farmers in as far as Guatemala. And if you want to go back to Asia, in the Philippines, it's the same way. And if you're a worker, then you say, wait a minute, I'm working in a coffee plantation. And if I am paid $20, and I heard from my friend who was in the United States, who got deported, that they got paid better, that they can be paid $20 a day. And that the coffee that I'm working on here, you know, they buy it for $2 to $3 a cup. Why would they stay here in the field? So might as well go and take my chances and cross the border and find a better life in the United States of America. So, and these are ordinary people. They are not terrorists. They are not criminals. They are simple, ordinary people. If we look back at history the same way that the Mayflower, all those Europeans who came from Germany, from Poland, from England, many places trying to come to this country to get away from persecution, religious persecution, political persecution, coming here to find a better life, entering to New York, entering to that Statue of Liberty. And these people from Guatemala, from El Salvador, Honduras, and Mexico, trying to find a better way also for their life. Because life is so bad, it's so unacceptable, living in condition of poverty, of persecution, that we here in the United States will not be able to stomach and accept. That is something that people need to understand. Immigrant coming here, bringing with them their life, their talents, their energy, their faith, as well as their culture. They're not coming here with bombs. No. They come here because they want to find a better life. And now they don't feel welcome.
Catherine, President Bush in January outlined his proposals for immigration reform. I mean, nobody seems to think that the immigration policies that we have now works. So he outlined his, and there's a new, more liberal agenda, the SALT Act. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure, I'd love to. The SALT Act was backed by all the major unions, including the SEIU and the AFL, and we've also been in coalition with all of the major Latino groups and immigrants' rights groups as well. And I think we took the best of what President Bush proposed. I'm actually really, you know, happy that he made clear that the immigration system is very, very badly broken. For example, for a person to bring their spouse or their child from Mexico, a person who's a legal permanent resident here who wants to bring their spouse or their child from Mexico, as the law allows, the backlogs are 10 years long. So the current immigration system just doesn't work at all in the real world. I don't know if you could imagine being separated from your spouse or your child for 10 years. And that's why you also see, you know, young wives or husbands and little children risking their lives in the Arizona desert. And also for employers who really do want to hire the immigrant labor and aren't displacing a U.S. worker, they have to wait 18 months or 3 years to make the hire. And for anybody who's ever had their own business, you know that you can't wait 18 months to actually make your hire legally. So the system's very badly broken. President Bush talked about working with the Congress to dramatically increase the number of green cards, but that hasn't happened. We haven't seen that happen at all on the Republican side or coming from the administration. But the SALT Act would. What it would do is reduce the backlogs that I just mentioned and make sure that family members can come here, that family members who are family members of legal permanent residents are treated the same as family members of citizens, so they're not subject to those long backlogs. The backlogs are the worst from Mexico. That's because every country in the world only is allowed 7% of the world's visas. Of course, people from Finland don't need it as much as Mexicans, who are, you know, our close neighbors, and we've always had a lot of interdependency. What the SOLVE Act would also do is make sure people who are here in an undocumented status right now would have the chance to earn legalization. They would have to prove that they have a job. They would have to pay taxes. Their job couldn't displace a U.S. worker, and they would also have to pass a security check. What the SOLVE Act would also do, which goes well beyond any of the proposals that either party has put forth, and this is truly an act that's built by a coalition of people with expertise in immigration, is to make sure that in the future there's a safe and legal way for people to come here, that they're not risking their lives in the Arizona desert, that they're not subject to human trafficking, and that when they do come here, they're not living in the shadows and living in a very, very vulnerable status and subject to exploitation. And then finally, one of the most important components is the SOLVE Act would make sure that people who come here as immigrant workers on a temporary worker visa have the equal chance to become American citizens, to get on a path to citizenship, and to have the same chance to realize the American dream as those millions of immigrants who came here from Eastern Europe and from Western Europe and in earlier generations who came here with no papers whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that the current generation of immigrants and future generations have the chance to become legal permanent residents and American citizens, and they are just not going to be always in a permanent underclass, which is what a guest worker status would do. So those are the main components of the SOLVE Act. It does much, much more. We decided that we'd been waiting for a long time to see a good proposal put on the table, and rather than wait, we decided to put forth what is needed actually to fix the broken immigration system, and that's why it's called SOLVE, because it would provide a solution.
And we are speaking with Catherine Culleton from the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund and the Reverend Arnaldo Abrelado of La Placita Church in Los Angeles. And since both of you have mentioned the Arizona border, again, to put some meat on the bone, to put a face on what happens, clearly there is strengthening of the Arizona border and people are being pushed, I believe, further into the desert as they try to move to a state where they can earn a living for their family and live in peace. Reverend, can you give us more of a sense of what that experience means to the people who are indeed finding themselves further and further in the desert?
It's getting more difficult and it's getting more riskier because as they strengthen the border, for example, of Tijuana and Arizona Desert, even on the other side of in Texas, in McAllen, the Rio Grande, because there is a strong militarization, I don't know how you call it, but there is strong presence of the border patrol. The immigrants with their coyote is someone who is like the smuggler, have to find other route, other places, which is, that would mean they have to go further inside the desert. And when they travel through the desert, especially right now into the summer period, it is going to be very hot. And a lot of them could die of dehydration besides, you know, being beaten by snake. Or in Texas, there are some stories there, you know, when I was in Texas, that some rancher are doing a shooting, you know, because they're passing through their territory, their place, and they're trespassing. So sometimes you will hear stories, real stories, that immigrants being shot by ranchers. And for us, for example, in our church, in many churches in Los Angeles where there are a lot of Latino community, and they would say, you know, I want to bring my family. And that would mean it's so hard to do it on a legal means. 2 o'clock in the morning, they have to be online in the U.S. Embassy in Mexico, and they have to prove they have $5,000 professional and so on and so forth. And basically, it will be hard to get a visa the proper way. So the easiest way, sometimes they are forced to pay $2,000 to pay a coyote, which is a smuggler, to cross them from Mexico to United States. And because the border are getting more stronger and more difficult, they have to go through different routes, which is further more dangerous and more difficult. It's so hard because sometimes I will meet someone in the church and they will say, Father, you know, I just came in. I don't ask them, well, how do they came in? But I'm sure, you know, they have been through a long, long, long journey. And I have to offer them, you know, our community offer them, always prepare. We have a blanket always some sandwiches, because I know that in the middle of the night, there is someone who will arrive in the church in front of the Virgen de Guadalupe, Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is a famous saint devotion for many of the Latino community, especially the Mexican. So it's so hard. It's getting more dangerous, and it's getting more riskier for the people as they cross the border.
We didn't even mention the driver's license, which are a fundamental concern.
Our organization, which is One LA, is our concern is to build an organization to organize and develop leadership among the different ethnic community. And to do that is to, you know, just like your program, is that building bridges. How can we bring people together? How can we sit down together, understand, listen to our story? And we have to build a relationship by listening to each other's story. Stories of immigration, for example, in California, an estimate of 2 million undocumented are driving. In other words, they don't have driver's license. When they don't have driver's license, they don't have insurance. They did not want to do that. But because of the security, before 1994, anyone in California could apply for a driver's license as long as you can provide an identification, a passport or an ID. Right now, no. But our immigrants, whether documented or undocumented, need to go to school, need to go to work, need to go to places they have to go, and they're forced to drive without a driver's license. On July 11, in solidarity with all the immigrants, we would like to bring that as one of the issues that are important to us. We want to call the governor, who was also an immigrant from Austria, who started from scratch, as he was always saying, that to have a sense of compassion, to have a sense of understanding that many of these immigrants are in here working hard, paying their taxes, contributing to Social Security, even though we may say that they are not the right number, but nevertheless, government collects them and it stays with the government. So we would like to show in solidarity with 10,000 leaders that we have of this coalition, African American, Asian, synagogues, Protestant, Catholic churches, and unions and teachers associations, that we are together. There are people who would say, you know, get away, go away, immigrants, undocumented. But we would like to show that the United States, in this country, there are still a lot of people who have a compassionate heart, who knows how difficult it is. And that is what we would like to hear. The story of relationship, the story of solidarity, and to build that relationship, to build that communication, that collaboration, that we continue to fight. We continue to do this.
And Kathy Culleton from the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, what is the agenda, and how can people get in touch with MALDEF?
The agenda here at the national level?
The agenda that you're working on in, I know you're also working on the DREAM Act and other pieces of legislation.
Great.
And please tell us quickly and how we can get in touch with you.
Sure. Thank you very much. Again, you can just get on our website. It's www.maldef.org. We're part of the Reverends Coalition. I'm very, very happy to be part of the Reverends Coalition in California. We have offices across the country working on Latino civil rights issues and immigration policy reform and immigrants' rights are a big part of our agenda. Here at the national level, we're pushing the SALV Act, the DREAM Act for college students, the Agricultural Jobs Reform Act for the agricultural sector, and we're also pushing for the Civil Liberties Restoration Act and the Homeland Security Civil Rights and Civil Liberties Act, which would start to hold the Border Patrol accountable to the American constitutional standards that apply to everyone and every action of every law enforcement official in the United States. So we're trying to bring back the concept that the Bill of Rights of the United States of America applies to every person, every human being. And I'm just very moved to hear the Reverend. We are a nation of immigrants, and I think most Americans are coming around to our side, so we look forward to making progress together.
Catherine Culleton from the Mexican-American Legal Defense Fund and the Reverend Arnaldo Abarlado of La Placita Church of Los Angeles. I hope both of you will be back to join us on many occasions because the agenda is critical to support. And if we talk about sovereignty or issues of non-discrimination, then we are certainly talking about supporting the rights of our immigrant sisters and brothers. And first and foremost, this is a nation of immigrants. And we'd like to thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you very much. It's my honor.
Thank you very much also.
Indeed ours, and we will speak with you again.
We sew the clothes, the ones that you buy. We can't afford them for ourselves. The price is too high. Our families need food. We don't need name brands. We just like a fair share of the money.
And we go from Pat Humphrey's No Sweat in support for our sisters and brothers who are immigrants who need to be documented. And this has been a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash for Building Bridges.
And to find out more about Building Bridges, you can go to our website at www.buildingbridgesonline.org. That's www.buildingbridgesonline.org.